what? No, it hasn't. Back, oh, yes, it has. She's a fat. She's a fat. She's a fat expat. Two to the fat to the fat expat. Two fat expats.
Two fat expats.
Okay, Stairs, episode 5 of...
We're going strong.
We are. We are. Now, we need to start with a big, big thank you, I think.
To our friend Dave.
Our friend Dave.
Do you know, I looked him up on the internet yesterday.
Oh, did you?
He doesn't look like what I thought he would look like, but he's cute.
Of course he's cute. We know he's going to be cute because he likes us.
Yes.
He's obviously very smart.
Yes.
Very handsome. And someone you'd want to hang out with.
Someone you'd want to have a beer with.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So for those who don't know, because we've just taken that little thread somewhere completely off track again, my girlfriend Vanessa was driving home the other day in Noosa in Australia. She used to live here in Doha. And on the radio came the beautiful dulcet tones of Dave talking about
us.
For
a long time.
Oh, 9 minutes.
9 minutes.
Thank you, Dave. We just wanted to say we love you, Dave, from the ABC on the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, it made our week, didn't it?
Oh, I think it's made my year. Yeah.
So we hope there's many more reviews.
Yes.
And we hope you're still listening and enjoying the show.
Yes. So thank you very much, Dave. Okay, so today on Two Fat Expats, our little podcast about living a fat life and making your life large.
And because we're fat.
Yes.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. We're going to be talking about employment contracts and why and how they differ from our everyday employment contracts we have at home.
Very different kettle of fish to back home.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's important to note, because I was only thinking about this last night, Stairs, because on the weekend I was out with a group of people who would have been a good 15 years younger than me.
Right.
And were at a different stage of their expat life as well, in that they're single and they may have been like living in London or living in Sydney or living in wherever, and they've come here for the job.
Yeah.
And so their expat contract's a lot different because they're living in shared kind of apartment accommodation.
Right, yes,
and for them it's like if you've been paying exorbitant rent in London, you know, the rent here is pretty much on par or a bit, little bit more expensive.
Yeah.
So it's a whole different kettle of fish if you don't have any children.
Yeah. You're not worried about schooling.
Yeah. And it really is just about the job and you're thinking, I'm going to come for 3 years and work at whatever.
Yeah.
So
save
there's,
your money, have a bit of an
have adventure. Have a bit of a fun, whatever. So their story is a little bit different perhaps than the expat family who are also then having to, because I think the real cost comes in, and we've kind of asked this of both our kind of blogging communities too, the real cost comes in when it comes to family and schooling, housing for a family.
Absolutely.
When you suddenly can't just do the two-bedroom apartment. Yeah. And insurance and health and getting people home. So I guess that's probably our focus today is to talk about what you need to think about if you're moving as a family and some of the things you need to factor into your employment contract.
Yeah.
So it says my situation and your situation were both different because I moved with an enormous big
international
firm, and you moved with a smaller firm.
Yeah, they had offices in the UK, but this was their only outfit in the Middle East. And so I don't think they really had the procedures and protocol in place of a big international firm that does this a lot, you know, moving people back and forth overseas.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that surprised you?
I think for Matt and I, really the whole point of moving to the Middle East was, one, it was something that he wanted to do for a long time because he's in construction. So the building game here is just amazing, the architecture and what have you. So that was the big seller.
Well, it is one big construction site.
It is.
Isn't it? Yeah.
He gets off on lots of cranes. and, you know, it was to earn more money. I just had Sadie. She was 2 months old when we moved to Abu Dhabi, so I wasn't working. And we did our research as far as what it was like to live in the Middle East.
Right.
I didn't know a lot about their region and I wanted to make sure we were going to be safe. But what we didn't do our research on was I wasn't even thinking about schooling. You know, I had a 2-month-old baby, so schooling wasn't even a part of our contract.
Same.
Rent wasn't a part of our contract. And what we discovered when we arrived in Abu Dhabi is the rent you have to pay annually. So you have to give 12 checks up front.
Yes.
Actually, it's one big check up front, not 12 checks, one big check up front. And we had to take out essentially a mini mortgage.
To pay rent.
To pay rent.
And that could make you kind of grumpy.
Yeah, not to mention, we'd left our really lovely home in Melbourne to move into a tiny two-bedroom. It was almost like student accommodation.
Right.
Yeah. We had to buy furniture from scratch. I mean, we did not save any money that first year.
So you weren't in the big white colonial house with the grass and the gardener.
No.
And I think that's the thing. There is this amazing kind of myth, and I guess maybe it was – it's a throwback from the 60s and 70s, but people have this idea that expats just make boggins and boggins of cash and, you know, that they're all living these, you know, incredible lives. And, yes, they are when it comes to, you know, maybe a chance to travel and, you know...
Immersing yourself
in different cultures and getting to see the world. But those days of those great big fat expat packages are kind of over.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why you need to be really clever about negotiating your employment contract.
For sure.
Because there are many people, and these are the people I think that often aren't talked about, that are going backwards in their expat world because they didn't think about how much these things were going to cost and they've suddenly got here and they're continually trying to get ahead, and they're in a situation they can't get out of because they've signed a contract.
Yeah.
So we wanted to talk about housing and that was definitely something that you needed to factor in because housing can be incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
I think for a run-of-the-mill, would you say, like sort of three-bedroom compound house, you're looking at what here? It's about 12,000 reais minimum?
Even more now. We were paying 12 when we first arrived, and our house that we were in 5 years ago is now 17,000
a month. Holy. So what's that in US?
And it was nothing special.
Dollars. I want to say that's probably at least 4,000 US dollars a month.
Yeah, four and a half.
So that's a lot of money.
Absolutely. In Abu Dhabi, in our two-bedroom apartment, we were paying 60,000 Australian dollars a year.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So
we both couldn't fit in the kitchen together. That's how tiny it was.
And so you want to, you know, maybe if you're in New York and you're in your tiny little kitchen.
Yeah, then I can
handle
that.
You're happy to handle that. But when you're in the desert, and there's a sandstorm and you're covered in dust like we all have been for the last couple of days.
Yes.
It's going to make you kind of narky. And that that was one of the points, as you and I have talked about before, is that your whole expat experience can really waver on all of this.
Yeah.
Because if you're not happy, you are just going to have a terrible
You want on that next plane home.
You do.
And I remember the first few months of our time in Abu Dhabi, I used to call, I would get lost and I'd be on my way to Dubai or LA and have no idea how to get back. And I would call Matt and say, if you don't find me a way back, I'm on the next plane and I'm out of here. Now, if that had happened in Melbourne or Sydney, I would never have had that reaction.
No.
But when you're away from everything that's familiar to you, I think the little things get escalated.
And particularly if you are the partner of the person who's got the contract. So all of a sudden you find that your whole life is ruled by your partner's contract.
Absolutely.
And their work. And I never once, when we were married in Australia, did I ever tie so much into G's career and what he was doing. I didn't think about the company at all and was busy doing my own thing.
Yeah.
But suddenly, once we started moving together, it was almost like we both worked for this company because they decided on our housing, they decided on our schooling, they decided on our health insurance. They had the power continuously to really mess with my life.
Yeah. Well, I play a part in Matt's negotiations, not obviously with his boss, but at home we sit down and this is what I want, this is what I think we need, and I would never have done that back home.
No.
But it impacts my life.
Yes, that's right. And I think that's the thing, that if you are thinking about an expat move, just know that, it's not like I live on a company compound. Mm-hmm. So I continuously, even when I drive through the gate, I will see people that G works with. Now, that would never happen in the real world. I would have nothing to do with, you know, I'm sure I'd want to, and they're very nice people, but I probably wouldn't seek them out, you know. No. Oh, I'm going to become friends with everybody and I'm going to have movie nights with, you know, other people.
Yeah.
From, it is something to
get used to.
Is very bizarre.
Yeah.
It is. Okay, so housing, I think we've covered, is just make sure. I would always want to have
due diligence before you move.
Absolutely. So if it's not covered in your contract, you want to make sure you're earning enough money to be able to pay for that. Schooling is the one that's really crazy expensive, I find. It's nuts.
And you don't have a choice other than to send your children to an international school, which is a private school.
No, that's
right. You know, back home, our kids can go to the local primary school.
And they would,
And we then have the choice, you know, in high school, whether we want to send them to private or public. We've got that choice.
Yeah.
Here, we don't have a choice. We can't send them to the local schools.
No. So when I think, you know, if you're moving to a North America or to the UK, you would send them to the local school. So, I mean, if you're negotiating that sort of contract, you would happily say, oh, well, they'll just blend in and go to the local school.
Schooling wouldn't even become part of it, would it?
But when you are in other parts of the world where it's a different language and a different culture, you know, obviously here the schools are all single sex and, you just don't have that option. So international schools are always ridiculously expensive because people know that usually most people's companies are paying for them, and
so
that
the schools can hike up the fees.
And I guess too, they have those facilities. Usually, they're trying to throw in a a swimming pool because it's not like you can go down to the local pool. And maintain a grass because there is no local park. So schooling can be horrendously expensive, and this is one thing too that you need to think about. If it's really important to you that your children go to, say, there's an Australian school and you want them to, if all of a sudden you get there and you can't get them in for whatever reason, is that something that's going to make you grumpy every single day?
And for people that are moving here to the Middle East, there aren't any school places.
No.
That's something that you need to... That's probably the first thing before you make a choice about moving over here.
Yeah.
Can you get your children into school?
That's right.
Because if you move your family over here and all of a sudden there's no school places, then what do you do? And that's a big concern here at the moment in the Middle East. There's so many people moving here and not enough school places.
Yeah. And, you know, it says like we've been talking, there's a lot of people in Doha talking recently about a school that might be closing. And that's another thing that you have to factor in is just the constant unknown. So there's a school here with a great reputation who has a campus in the UK as well and is, you know, well known. And they're having troubles at the moment negotiating their lease. And so I have called a meeting saying, we really hope that we're going to be here in September, but we're not sure if we will be. So there's a whole...
That's a lot of displaced families, isn't it?
There's a whole bunch of parents that are now saying, well, do I have to find another school? Do I have to go home?
Yeah.
What do I have to do? So factor those things in that you want to be... You want to have a really clear idea of how that's going to look for you.
Absolutely. We could do a whole another podcast on schooling, I think.
You could. Okay, so other things that we've thought about and that the community have sort of written in and told us about too is repatriation. So you want to know that you're going to be able to get
you
sent
can be
home.
Caught out because we've got friends that don't get repatriated. It's all on them to pay for their flights back and their shipping.
Yeah.
Now, they're lucky that the new company that they're going to are paying for the shipping for their container and what have you.
Yeah.
But they didn't realise until they read through the contract when it was too late that the company here actually doesn't repatriate them. So you really need to...
Which can mean a lot if you have gone and you've saved your X thousands of dollars, you know, thinking, well, this is going to go off the mortgage, and then you suddenly find out, well, no, actually, this
spending
is just going to get us home.
In shipping containers.
Or you don't end up sending your stuff home. So that's one. The other one was work permits. Make sure that you can get a work permit for your partner.
Yes.
Because you may find that you want to hit the ground running mm-hmm. and be working the minute you get there. And there are often a lot of opportunities in the expat world Absolutely. To work. As much as I know, that, and this is a whole other podcast about women and working and work permits and careers and mm-hmm. children and whatever, there are expat life is a great time to reinvent yourself as
Absolutely.
Well and find something new. So make sure that you might be thinking, oh no, I'm not going to work, I'm going to be busy doing mm-hmm. XYZ, and suddenly get there and go, well, actually I do, I really
that happened
want
to me. I always thought I was going to be a stay-at-home mum. That was my dream. I was just going to raise babies. Didn't have the babies that I thought I was going to have. And the funny thing was, I ended up getting a job at a school here in Doha because it was the perfect timings with Sadie being at school. Matt had to give written permission for me to get a job. And he's like, do I want my wife to go out and earn extra money to pay for our holidays? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'll sign that piece of paper.
And Serge, you've raised a really, really good point in that if those things are going to get up your bum, because I had to get a written permit to buy alcohol, which you did as
yes.
well. And, you know, we had a situation on Thursday where we'd run out of white wine. Dun, dun, dun. And I raced down to go and get more because it was an emergency situation, and my permit had expired and I had to have that.
And it was a Thursday?
Yes.
So let's just quickly explain that there is only one booze shop here in Doha. It's out in the back of nowhere, actually. It's like 2 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
And a Thursday is our Friday.
Yeah.
So it's like,
it's like shopping on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is.
I so have to go without a permit.
Oh, shocker.
Brave.
Yeah. 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 And, but I had to have that revolting conversation of, oh, you'll need a letter from your husband before I can renew your form.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that if you are grumpy with where you live or grumpy with the school, little things like that
will send you over the edge. I used to react to things like that.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, I can't change it.
Yeah.
I just need to go with the flow. But a few years ago, I would have gone off at that.
I think,
who are you to tell me that my husband needs to tell me that I can go and buy myself a Bacardi Breezer on a Thursday afternoon? But now I just...
Yeah, I think I used to have to drive around Libya with a letter from my husband in the glove box saying I had permission to drive. And
I don't think Matt would have given me permission.
And I just, that used to drive me insane, that letter in the glove box, you know.
Because we come from a country where
you can do whatever
you can
like.
Do, and we're brought, like, you're only girls, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'm
only
girls. So my parents were really, you go out there and you do what you want and you fight for what you want and you educate yourself. And then here, the big shift.
But I think the one thing that keeps me going here is times are changing here.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are more women who have university degrees here than men.
Yes.
And women are kicking butt in Qatar. So that's the one thing that keeps me going, is it's like, well, there are big changes and I can see big changes. And I understand the culture a little bit more now. So we've done housing, we've done work permits. Oh, the one thing we wanted to talk about was expat forums. So you find out you're moving, you jump on, I mean, because times have changed so much, but now you would jump on Facebook, you'd find an expat forum.
Yeah. If you Google expat forums in the city that you're moving to, a plethora of information will come up.
But I wanted to say one of the dangers of forums is that you go out and post your message, you know, how much do I need to pay for schooling or how much do I need to do whatever? And you are going to have such a wide scope of ideas and some people are going to give you crazy bits of information. We've all seen it where we've looked on a forum and gone, what? So be really specific would be my advice.
Yeah.
If you're American, your tax laws are going to be so different
completely
than if you're Australian.
Mm-hmm.
And an Australian isn't going to know that your tax laws are going to be really different. And it'll be different again if you're South African. It'll be different again if you're a Brit. So I would get on a forum and ask specifically for people like you.
Yeah.
So I would be asking, you know, what I did on the forum I went to, I had a fair idea of which compound we were going to live on. So mm-hmm. I asked if there was anyone that lived on that compound, yeah. And asked if there was anyone that had sort of the same age yeah. children, asked if there was anyone that went to these three sort of mm-hmm. schools. And then I actually ended up getting someone's phone number and ringing them. And, you know, they were more than happy to have a chat with me.
And that is the thing that happens here. People are really open with their information and they're happy
there.
To share.
Yeah, we've all been
in the same boat. It's yeah. completely different from back home.
Yeah.
You do talk about the benefits that you get.
Yes. Yeah, you
and
do.
What have
yeah.
you got? What do you get? Oh, yeah. I don't know that.
Which is another reason why you need to make sure, because you will get narky. Like
yeah.
you will...
There's a bit of keeping up with the Joneses. Yeah. What do you call it?
Jonesing. I call it Jonesing. Yeah. So, which is a drug reference as well, but I'm good calling it a movie reference. But you will. And I don't think I am a keeping up with the Joneses person, but when you are unhappy somewhere yeah. and it is really driving you nuts that mm-hmm. you know your compound, and this is going to sound so petty, but after you've lived somewhere for a long time
yeah
your compound maybe doesn't have a shop where you yes. can get a carton
you know
milk.
What the kicker is for me yeah. is your pool chilled over the summer.
Oh yeah,
see, when we moved house, that was my number one thing. The pool has to be chilled over the summer,
yeah, because otherwise
now
you have
I sound
the most
like
useless...
an absolute spoiled brat saying that,
but
when
what's
it's
the
60
yes.
freaking degrees here, I just want to get in a cold pool,
yeah, or get in the pool. You can't if
no,
it's not
like a hot chilled. bath,
yeah. And I think a lot of people don't know that. I remember my girlfriend moved to Dubai and they had a pool, and she I remember her saying that to me, oh, but it's completely useless for most of the year,
yeah.
because it's either freezing cold in the winter or it's boiling hot.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
and there is nothing more delightful than all bobbing around with a bunch of people where you're like
yeah.
vegetable soup.
Yeah.
yeah.
with like 2-year-olds weighing in the pool.
Oh. Okay. So I think we've pretty much covered it, haven't we?
Quickly, health insurance.
Oh, yes, yes.
One thing you do for here in Doha, yeah. we can get public government health.
Yes.
So we can, there's public hospitals that we can
Which
go to
great.
That sort of works like the Medicare system yep. back home, even
yep.
better actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there is the option for private hospitals, which I know many expats like
yeah.
to
oh,
choose.
Particularly
to have.
If you're having a baby,
yeah,
because
yeah.
yeah, one of the things here in the local public hospital is if you're having a baby, your husband can't
be with you. Yeah.
So if you're alone in a country where it's just you and your husband,
and
you kind of
if you're
want
your
him.
First baby,
I know. Yeah, I can't.
That actually
imagine.
Breaks my heart when
Me
I hear
too.
Things like that.
Me
I can't imagine that.
Me too.
So with your health insurance, you don't get to choose what private health insurance company you have. That's mm-hmm. done through the company. So just really read the terms and conditions, because a lot of the times maternity won't be covered.
No.
Or only a little bit of dental will be covered if you've
yeah.
got teenagers.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
they're
right.
probably going to need braces.
And if your maternity isn't covered and you think, oh, that's okay, I've scoped out how much it's going to cost to have a baby, suddenly if you're thinking, oh no, I need a cesarean.
Yeah.
And that cesarean's going to cost me $15,000
yeah.
because
does
it's
the baby
not part.
Need to go into the
ICU.
Yeah.
Yep, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would really want to have that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, now
we were really lucky
yeah.
that we've had infertility issues, and our medical insurance covered all of our IVF.
That's fantastic.
So we were able to spend 2 years just going health leather trying to have another baby that we couldn't have done back home.
Yeah.
Or it would have sent us broke.
Yeah.
Back home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Cez, you had mm-hmm. a favourite blog post this week.
I did. Now, the blog is called Megfee, www.megfee.com. And I found her through a really big blogger based in New York called Rockstar Diaries. Now, Meg Fee is a young woman who moved from Texas to New York City when she was 18 to go to the Juilliard School of Performing Arts.
It really is like a movie,
it's
isn't
like
it?
Fame. I wanted to go to Fame.
I know. You haven't told me that, but I just know that.
You know that through me, don't you?
I definitely do.
I should have gone to the Fame School. Anyway, so this girl went to the Fame School. And she just writes about her trials and tribulations in love and life in New York.
Yes.
Her writing is exquisite. And I actually sent her an email yesterday, like I fangirled her.
Oh, good.
And I said, like, I'm stalking you.
I love you.
I love you so much. But her writing is Beautiful. And if you like to read sort of short stories, almost like you're reading a novel, but it's about her life. Yeah. Okay. Megfee.com. Love her.
Good, good, good. And my blog post would be not so much a blog post, but a blog. And I think a lot of people have heard of it. It's called Smitten Kitchen.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I love food, hence why we are both two fat expats. My love, I guess, for Smitten Kitchen is that it is a blog that has just become enormous.
She
is massive now. Often, you know, she'll pop up in my feed where so many different random people have shared her food. And it's from a tiny little kitchen in New York.
Teeny tiny.
Yeah, very impressive that she's done what she's done. Yeah. She's released a cookbook as well. But her food is just beautiful. But it's the passion for food. Like,
When she posts her recipes, it's not just chop up one onion and stir it. She, like, has a story behind everything
that she
cooks, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. She has a real reason behind it and a feeling behind it. And you and I have talked before about how there's food bloggers who really love their food and love to cook, and you just get caught up in that story so much more than
it
just...
It makes you want to cook.
Yeah, rather than just food reviewers, do you know?
I love the story behind a dish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Me too.
Like, why were they cooking this meal?
Yeah. So Smitten Kitchen, and that's Deb, and I think it's Perelman.
We're not sure. Sorry, Deb, but we love you.
Yes, we do, and it's fantastic. So it says, you're, maybe I'll do the podcast first
before we get into my controversial hashtag.
Sarah's hashtag for this week is just a ripper.
Pun intended.
So I just quickly wanted to say about podcasts is last night I was very excited to see that my favourite podcast has returned. Mm-hmm. So towards the end of last year, two fantastic Australian women, Lee Sales and Annabelle Crabb, both political writers. Lee Sales is on the 7:30 report on the ABC. Yeah. Annabelle Crabb is a political writer and... has written some of the most fabulous essays. But I think, Sarah, I bored you to tears for a good 2 weeks on the wife drought and why I thought the wife drought was the most incredible book I'd read in a long time. Just fact and statistics. Look, just download on your Kindle.
Yes, I will.
Yeah. Just a brilliant, you know, it's been a long time, I think, since I've read a book where I've kind of rethought a few decisions that I had made and realised that there was a lot more to some of my decisions. It wasn't maybe just me choosing. It was a lot of what was just generally going on around me that I hadn't factored in. But I would highly recommend for people to read The Wife Drought. But Annabelle Crabb is not only can she write incredibly well, she's can bake. She has a show called My Kitchen Cabinet on the ABC where she talks to different politicians each week, and that itself is a good one. If you're not Australian, I think maybe you're going to miss quite a few of the references because they are. It is very much Australian politics, but their chat show or their podcast is 30 minutes of them, incredibly informal, just grab a mic, sit wherever, and they are both so incredibly well read that you'll just pick up bits and pieces of books they've read and why they liked them and what they've seen, and it might be whether it's something they've read in a newspaper or something that they've read, you know, in print or same thing. But but just so clever, and the vocabulary. So I had trouble saying vocab. It is incredible and fun, just really, really funny. So
when your boyfriend, Richard Feidler, interviewed Annabelle Crabb, she was telling about a story when Kevin Rudd, a previous Australian Prime Minister, was maybe getting ready to quit.
Yes.
And they quickly, the 7:30 report said to Annabelle, quickly, can you get here in studio?
Yes.
And something like her kid had a birthday party or something.
Yeah.
And then the husband, so Lee's husband, Annabelle's husband, they had to take charge back home.
Yeah. Well, I think they have something like five children between them under eight.
And Lee did a quick thanks to our husband because Kevin Rudd took his time coming on to make his announcement, so they had to keep the show
going. And it was going. Fantastic TV because the two of them had to just keep talking for hours.
They had to
ad-lib
the whole time, didn't they?
Yeah.
And apparently Annabelle had a jacket on, but she didn't have any pants on. Like, she would, like, had tracksuit pants
or
something.
Or gumboots or something.
Yeah, because she had to come straight from it. But I listened to that interview and I just loved it. I loved hearing about the behind the scenes. And, and I think that's where maybe the wife drought came from, because they made mention of thank you to our husbands who were
at home.
Why should they thank them? Because they're dads, they're husbands.
Yeah, yeah.
Pick up the pieces and look after your kids.
Yeah, it's that whole dad's babysitting rubbish, isn't it? Yeah, I think one of the most poignant messages I got from that book was her running into Tanya Plibersek, who, if you're not from Australia, is the deputy opposition leader. And Tanya Plibersek has young children as well, and had a child the same age as Annabelle. And it was just, the phrase just really got to me, because I went back to work when my fourth child was 5 months old. So I know that, and I used to have to travel once a week and leave the kids. And that revolting feeling of someone's, you know, slightly could not be well, am I going to need to take you to the doctor, or am I going to get on that plane? And, you know, and a husband that travelled as well and worked. But the story was, she had, Annabelle had her child and ran into Tanya, and she's, the phrase she used was, Tanya had that look of a mother who looks over a child about the same age as hers and thinks, is this going to be particularly weird if I start sniffing your child's head? Because we're all like that, right? Yeah, where you just want to touch and because you're missing.
You're missing your child,
And but when Annabelle had talked about, you know, weren't they both lucky that they both had such great husbands, Tanya Plibersek had sort of taken a moment and said, you know, Annabelle, I really hope we're the last generation of women to consider ourselves lucky.
Yeah.
And
it should just be part and parcel, shouldn't it?
And I'm constantly told how lucky I am to have Greg, because he cooks.
My mum and dad say that to me all the time. They have no idea how lucky you are to have Matt. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't tell him to do those things. He just does them because he's as much a parent as I am.
But he chose to have the children just as much as you did. Yeah, but
different generation, whole new podcast.
Whole new podcast. But so that would be mine. Is they have come back at Christmas time. They finished, because I don't know how either of them could possibly
fit
in.
So what's the podcast called?
Chats 10 Looks 3, because Lee Sales is a big Broadway fan, and it's
Because that's from Chorus Line.
Yes, and.
Yes, I should have gone to fame.
You should have gone to fame. That totally qualifies you for it.
I can recite the whole of a Chorus Line.
Oh, I'm impressed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Chats 10 Looks 3. And now, finally, the hashtag
controversial.
Hysterical.
Yes. So my girlfriend Lauren, back home in Sydney, sent me a text message the other day that just said, hashtag things I lift with my vagina. Now, my girlfriend Lauren, she can be a bit naughty. She's very open.
Right.
So when I read that, I thought, holy F-balls, Lauren, what have you done?
What are you lifting with
your
vagina?
What are you lifting? Yes. So anyway, I quickly went on to Instagram and searched hashtag things I lift with my vagina. Right. So it's this woman called Kim Anami or Anami, and she is a sex therapist.
Right.
And she believes that women should have super strong vaginas.
Good on you, Kim.
And that you should be able to lift objects with your vagina.
Ah, just another thing to fit into the routine.
Yeah, along with your vaginal steam cleaning.
Yes, thank you, Gwyneth.
Thank you,
Gwyneth.
So she lifts donut. Easy.
Yeah.
I probably would have eaten the donut.
Yeah, I wouldn't be
in the shower. Which would not have been a good look.
No.
So then she went to a flower. Then it got a bit weird. She lifted weights.
Yes.
Then the kicker, she wrapped a surfboard in string, rope, what have you, stuck it up her bits.
Yes.
And it was hanging from her.
Oh, I know. And look, I know, great party trick if that's what you want to do. But, and I know we were laughing about this yesterday.
We can take a more serious tone, because you kind of think maybe it's...
Oh, I just think it's vagina shaming.
Yeah.
I interesting.
But do you want to lose something to with your vagina?
Look, I understand Kegels are incredibly important. I don't know if this woman has had any babies or any.
She's probably got about six of them, and she did some water birth, hypnobirthing.
But it just was another thing where I thought it was a bloody good giggle. Like, it was funny.
Oh, yeah. We laughed. Quickly laugh at, you know, have a look on the surface of things, like see a surfboard hanging between a woman's legs.
And then, and so it was all funny, funny. And then I realised that she was actually taking herself very seriously.
She travels the world teaching women how to toughen up your vagina.
Yeah. And I agree. You know, maybe I do need to toughen up my vagina. I don't know. But I just, I've got other stuff going on.
I don't think about my vagina.
Yeah, I probably think about it a bit.
See, I don't care what it looks like.
Yeah.
Have you seen at the movies here, there is signs at the front of the movies for revagination?
Oh,
you can
no.
get your bits done.
No.
At the movies here in Doha.
See, I find that just sad.
But see, I don't think about my vagina.
No.
I don't care what it looks like.
No. As long as it's working.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with it. Yeah. I haven't had any complaints about it.
No, me neither.
No. Never. So I figure it's okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's our week this week. We will be back next Monday.
Yes.
We're sorry for the little delay when people woke up this morning and it wasn't there. That's all my fault. But
it's
we're
okay.
Learning. Thank
She's
you,
become
darling.
Very techie, and I'm like, you produce everything.
I know, but it was a bit of a disaster.
But
anyway,
it's, okay.
It's all done now. We'll be back next week. We are loving it. Oh, we haven't done the usual plead and
So please review, rate, share.
Yeah. It's the thing that gets us in the new and noteworthy, and because we are just a couple of people sitting,
we are sitting on the floor in your bedroom. I've got my gym clothes on, but I'm not going to the gym. This is very guerrilla style.
Yes, and so we kind of can't compete with the big radio stations and whatever, but we're doing all right. We're on the front page
of
New and Noteworthy.
And
thank
Dave
you,
loves us.
So please, if you get a chance and you're on iTunes, could you please just give us a rating or
a review.
Anyway, thank
you. I'm going to practice lifting things from my vagina and bribe people.
Yeah. We'll take
ping
photos.
Pong show at my compound next weekend.
All right. On that note, we're going to say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.